This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we'll be going over Love, of Course. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to spoil it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we will see you next time.
Are you ready
for One Dry Kiss?
Yeah! Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to Hallmark movies, where in the month of January, we have one transformational Hallmark movie on our Tuesdays. Today we are doing Love, comma, of Course.
Comma. The comma is very important in the title.
Comma is very important. And I am here with my newly electronicized, gigantic TV-sized, bestie, better than the restie, Tamara Cosio.
And I am here with my intelligent, speedy, internet-having, incredible, Ivy League-caliber co-host, Corinne Eddy. Because this movie is about college, and so you could go to an Ivy League school if you wanted to.
Yeah, I don't think I'm classy enough for the Ivy League, personally, but, you know.
Oh, you bite your tongue. You're plenty classy. When you trim your toenails with your teeth, I mean,
oh, perfection,
swoon.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's how I seduce all my house guests. I'm just gonna put that out there right now.
Yeah, and everybody keeps arguing she cannot get her foot up that high. I'm like, you want to bet?
Mm-hmm. And I'm here to prove you wrong. Not you,
flexible.
Because you already believe in me, but the other people who don't have the faith.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've seen it for myself. Classy as fuck.
Mm-hmm. Oh, how you been doing?
Well, I guess I have to clarify what you meant with my big TV. Dear listeners, my ex, for some inexplicable reason, decided that I needed a big screen TV and kept threatening to get me one.
So he could watch sports when he came over and visited.
Right. I mean, I thought it was just because he cared about my viewing pleasure. Mm. Anywho, so he went through with the threat and actually bought me one for Christmas. And it has taken us 2.5 days and 72 holes and 3 trips to the hardware store to get that bitch up on the wall. And I think I must have said 18 or 19 times, I don't even want this damn thing!
That explains why you didn't call me on Tuesday, why you weren't like, hey!
Yeah, no. You were talking about Queer Eye when you know I'm not answering back. When you're like, oh, I watched this Queer Eye episode, you know some shit's gone down. Some shit has gone down. Because I could talk about all those Queer Eye episodes all day long. They have a new season out. They're in Texas. It's glorious. Oh, wish there was a million of them.
We're just lucky that we got Tamara to finish the script so that we had a podcast to record today because of Queer Eye.
Yeah, I'm not going to guarantee the quality of my outline, but it's here and it's done. This is the most important thing.
Suddenly you start talking about Karamo instead of...
Oh, and then the lady that had the special needs animal shelter started crying.
And I'm like, I don't think that was in our movie. You're like, oh,
oh, oh,
oh, oh yeah, yeah, right.
Speaking of which, my first go round on this movie, I am going to admit it, I'm not very proud of it because I had a couple of glasses of wine.
Uh-huh.
And I was like just watching it to enjoy it. And
sure.
For some reason, nothing soaked in.
Okay.
Because the second go round, I'm like, oh shit, oh my God, I didn't even know that. Oh, I thought this was it. And I just like had revelation upon revelation and just felt like the biggest idiot. We'll get into it as we go through the outline because it's all very embarrassing. Some points and very entertaining in others.
See, what happened to me while watching this, and this happened to me again while I was watching it again, is I start off watching the movie and I'm like, oh my God, this is like my one and only, and he's like nagging her and it's just kind of gross and I don't really like it. And then like somehow halfway through, a magic wand gets waved at me and I'm like so invested and I'm like feelings and I'm getting hot and bothered at a Hallmark movie when there's almost nothing happening. What? Oh, It's so weird. I don't understand how, why, where I got there, but it is what it is.
I was gonna say, if you were like not invested and just not feeling, I was like, we're gonna fight on this one, because I thoroughly enjoyed this. I don't know how or why either, but I was like, this is a good fucking movie. I don't care. Right? It's a good movie.
I know. So weird.
See, that's it. That's the end of our show. We don't even have to give the dry kiss ratings. That's all you need to know. Go out and watch
good
it.
Good fucking movie. The end. Or I have an idea. How about I give a synopsis?
That sounds like an excellent idea. I'm all for it.
I'm just all full of good ideas. Synopsis. Amy, played by Kelly Rutherford, is a mom in her late 40s. Her personal style is jeans and a t-shirt with a blazer over the top. She has long blonde hair that she wears parted in the middle, and she is at the precipice of a big change in her life. She's a single mom slash widow living in L.A. with a lot of money, because when her husband died 6 years prior, she never got a job. She just kept on doing the whole stay-at-home mom thing, which, good for her, but holy business, what do you have to do to get that gig?
I am nodding emphatically.
She's taking care of her daughter, Kara, who she has centered her world around. Kara is leaving for college. Dun, 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 dun. What the fuck is she going to do with herself? That is the question on everyone's mind, probably including Kara's. When Amy ends up being offered a temporary job at the college in Oregon that her daughter is going to, she reluctantly takes it, hoping that it will ease her transition. What she doesn't count on is the infuriating man she has to work with, Professor Ferris, played by Cameron Matheson. He's a short-haired brunette whose personal style is jeans and sweaters. While Amy has been rooted in L.A., Professor Ferris has traveled the world and hops from job to job. Will he be able to plant himself long enough to work with Amy? Will Professor Ferris and Amy explode in a mass of tension and disagreements? Will Amy be too busy hovering over her daughter, Kara, to actually do a good job? Keep your listening ears listening to find out.
Great synopsis.
Thank you. Do you have some fun facts for us?
I have some fun facts and some not so fun facts. So my first, and yes, I do. My first fun fact is that there is a gymnast superstar that has a small part in this movie. The daughter's roommate, Kara's roommate,
Maddie,
named Maddie, is played by none other than Gabby motherfucking Douglas.
Wait a minute. Oh my God. How did I not realize that?
Yes. That was one of my second go rounds. Like, she looks familiar. Is that? I don't recognize her when she's not tumbling and like making it look like humans can actually fucking fly. If you don't know Gabby motherfucking Douglas, I highly recommend going onto YouTube and looking at some of her floor routines, because she's flawless and fierce and so fun to watch.
She's all the F's.
Oh, yeah. She was a member of the gold winning team at both the 2012 and the 2016 Summer Olympics. She was part of the Fierce Five and the Final Five, which was the name of the five girls that were just killing it those years. So she is a fucking badass, and she can act. So happy, happy, happy about that.
Love that.
Thought you would. I couldn't find a whole lot about Kelly Rutherford, who plays Amy. Her bio page on IMDb and Wikipedia reads like a snapshot into a very messy divorce. I'm not going to go into it.
No, that's not cute.
So I did find a very fun fact that I'm very excited to share with you about Cameron Matheson, who plays Professor Ferris. In the year of 1999, specifically the month of February, Mr. Cameron Matheson appeared on the cover of Playgirl magazine.
What? No.
Yes, and you know I looked it up. And he looks hottie patati, but he's like in a tank top and some like tight shorts, I believe. And then I was like, I haven't seen a Playgirl magazine in quite a long time, and I don't remember off the top of my head why I saw it in the first place. But I was like, do guys in Playgirl magazine like bear it all?
So I have an answer for you in that I have seen one Playgirl magazine. And I will say this, that It was rather disappointing because while some of them bore it all, they were all not excited, let's just say, in the pictures. And so it wasn't like, hey, sexy, look at them. The sausage. Instead, it was just like, oh, there.
I'm waving at you, but not a strong wave. I'm just like, hey, like a what's up, like a head nod. That's all that the penises are doing.
I'm like, if you want it to be like sexy, saucy guys, we need some tumescents.
What is a tumescence? I don't even know what that word means.
In certain romances, the throbbing tumescence will refer to a hard-on.
Throbbing. No, not sexy. Not sexy at all. But then you answered my next question, because I was like, if they do bear all, is it flaccid?
Flaccid. It's not sexy. You know, like, flaccid is fine for, like, everyday wear. But if you're going to be like, hey, I'm in a nudie magazine and I'm trying to look alluring, flaccid is not the way to go.
Maybe flaccid is friendlier, like... Hi, just here, you know, to hang around.
But if you're going to be buying a nudie mag, are you looking for the Mr. Rogers of nudie mags?
I don't know, because so many women that date in this day and age, when they get dick pics, usually that's a huge turnoff.
Well, sure. That's unsolicited, though.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever met a woman that solicited a dick pic. So if you have, dear listeners, please write into onedrykiss@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Well, there was one guy.
Oh?
I told you about him. I was in, I don't know, my late 30s, early 40s. He was in his 20s. And I was like, hey, nice to see you. Not interested. You're way too young. And he said, yeah, but I'm really hung. And I'm like, yeah, that's what all the guys say. So I kind of asked for it, you know? And he's like...
That would be a solicited dick pic.
Yes. And so he's like, no, I really am. And he showed me a picture, whole him, whole dick. And I was like, oh, okay. Yes, you are really hung. And still not coming anywhere near me. But thank you.
So I have one other not so fun fact about Cameron, but I bring it up for a reason.
Okay.
Because poor Cameron has had some health problems.
Oh.
As a child, he was diagnosed at 2.5 years old with leg Perthes disease, which is a degeneration of the hip bones, and for which he spent 6 months in the hospital, then the next 3.5 months on crutches, wearing a steel A-frame brace on his legs. But
wow.
He beat it, and I wish I knew that before, because I would have, like, watched the movie and been like, oh, look at him walking all normal. Good for you, Cameron. And, of course, I bring this up because your dad just had hip surgery.
Yes.
And so I thought it was relevant. It's like, oh, parallels.
My dad had hip surgery, so now he has things in common with Cameron Matheson. Thank goodness. Because it's not going to be the Playgirl spread, I'll tell you that. And...
No. Why did you even put that close to my head, let alone in it? So shall we dive right in?
Oh, yeah. Aerial shots of Los Angeles beaches and the skyline fill the screen as the title of the movie, Love, comma, of course, appears. Next thing we know, we're transported to a beautiful ranch-style house, and we see Amy, the leading lady, loading the car up with her daughter Kara's things. No, she's not getting kicked out for reform school, but rather they are going to take a mother-daughter road trip up to Oregon to drop Kara off at college.
How much do you think that house was worth?
I don't know. At least $1.5 million. Probably more.
I was going to say an excess of $2 million, which also just adds to the how the fuck is she able to afford living there without working for years and years and years? Ugh.
Amy is the mom who does it all. She's made zucchini bread muffins for the road, and Amy moves to Kara's room and finishes the last touches of packing. She picks up Mr. Hugsy, a white stuffed bear in a blue vest, and gets misty-eyed, hearkening back to Kara's childhood days. However, she's broken out of her reverie when Kara sees Mr. Hugsy, and she says to Amy, Mom, I think I'm going to leave Mr. Hugsy at home. I'm 18, and it's going to be weird if I take him to college with me. Amy responds earnestly, Well, I took my stuffy, Penelope Josephine. She got me through a lot of late-night studying. Marcus, Amy's brother, drops by to pick up the keys for house-sitting. gives Kara a gift card for college and pushes Amy to consider letting go of her house. It's been 6 years since her husband died. Maybe it's time for something new. You have a look in your eyes that says, fuck you very much. What's going on over there, Tamara?
I'm glad you asked. Thank you. Mr. Hugsy, way too fucking clean to be a beloved bear that she's had for a long time.
Agreed. It's a white bear. That was a bad judgment call.
No matter how well you take care of it, it's going to be matted and well-loved. And that bear just looked like, I don't know.
Not only that, but that bear looked like they got it from a claw machine. I mean, it was not, it was just the most generic looking bear, except that it had a really ugly blue vest on. But, you know, no accounting for taste. Amy isn't budging on letting go of the house, though. Kara took her first steps right over there. This house is full of so many memories, I can't let it go. No, my big dilemma right now is what I'm going to do with myself. I've channeled everything into supporting Kara, and now she's off to college. I'm at loose ends. Marcus suggests she get a job, and I'm impressed that she had the luxury of not working after her husband died. There it is. Amy points out that she has no resume unless she can put down PTA president, room mom, and Girl Scout troop leader.
Must be nice.
Yeah, to not have to work.
She's like a stay-at-home mom with no working parent in the house.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm just going to stay at home. It's like a miracle.
Maybe her husband had very good life insurance, and maybe she took out extra life insurance on it.
Yeah.
And then maybe there was a little accident.
That is the murderino in you. Those I thought the same thing. Because if you have the extra life insurance, you have the policy, and some of those policies are if it's an accidental death, you get some more money tacked on.
Exactly.
There was also a Mercedes and a BMW in the fucking driveway when her brother pulled up. And I'm like, sweet baby Jesus.
Well, you know. You got to have your little commuter cars to get you from point A to point B.
I just appreciate the fact that they're like kind of ambiguous about her circumstances, whereas some other ones where they're like, I work in a pet store and I'm in a like $750,000 home with a finished basement, 3 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms.
Or I'm in an apartment that costs like $2,000 to $3,000 a month.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I agree. She's just, you know, independently wealthy and I feel like she lives like a reasonably modest lifestyle. So, you know, good for her.
Okay.
As Tamara Cosio says, must be nice. Marcus encourages Amy. You're a catch. Any organization would be lucky to have you. And with that, he grabs a couple of muffins for the road and Amy, Kara, and Marcus head out the door. So, the big plan is that Amy will help Kara get set up at the dorm, and then Amy will spend the night at her friend Cheryl's place. Cheryl is the director of admissions, and her husband, Bert, is an econ professor at the college. So in case Kara needs anything, she's also got her mom's friend posse there backing her up. Amy's spending the night in case Kara needs her, and then she'll leave the next day and head back home to LA. Amy and Kara drive on to campus, which apparently you can do when you're getting set up in your dorm. I have seen it in movies. I have not gone to the type of college where this would actually happen. I don't know.
Oh, fuck. I didn't live on campus, but you were lucky if you could find a parking spot anywhere. Let alone not next to your dorm schmorm.
Well, they were like driving up on the like pathways. They weren't even roads. So,
yeah.
Amy and Kara are both so distracted that Amy almost hits a man with a wheelbarrow of plants. Watch out, Mom, Kara says. Amy suddenly breaks and the guy gives her a beleaguered look.
He looks pissed, like he was gonna fucking get in that car and like punch her in the throat. Like he looked super upset. I do have to say that Cameron Matheson gives good intense eye. Like he, woo! A couple of parts of this movie, this was one where I was like, oh, sweet baby Jesus, I would not want to meet him when he was mad.
Yeah, it's very interesting his eye expression range because it really can go from very intense to like very soft and warm within a very short span of time. But wheelbarrow guy moves on. After Amy and Kara have parked and are trundling Kara's belongings to the dorm, chaos ensues. Kara is giving her mom shit for a jumbo-sized container of hand sanitizer, and the contents of Amy's large mom purse spill all over the ground, and out tumbles Mr. Uggsy, along with the sunscreen, lotion, tissue packs, and assorted everything else. A gent says, "Let me help you." And when she looks up, oh shit, it's wheelbarrow guy, Noah, helping her. Noah picks up Mr. Uggsy, the teddy bear, which Amy brought along just in case. Mr. Amy jumps in. Uggsy. Kara doesn't appreciate it. Mom, he isn't supposed to be here. She takes Mr. Uggsy from Noah, dusts him off, and shoves the bear into Amy's hands. I think it's time I moved on from Mr. Uggsy. And she walks off to find her dorm room, leaving Amy with all of Kara's stuff. Noah assesses Amy. You know, I've seen this a lot, Amy responds. Teddy bear rejection? Noah says, parents who are having a hard time letting go. Amy, blinking furiously, raises an eyebrow. Are you a parent? Noah says, no, but I've worked here for 3 years and this is the fifth school I've worked at. Amy nods. I get it. So you're like an expert at moving on. And now I will be moving on to my daughter's dorm room. And she rolls towards the dorm with the cart and her daughter's stuff.
Yeah.
Once in the dorm room, she immediately pulls out matching sheets for Kara and her roommate. And Kara is so uncomfortable and self-consciously says, Mom, she has her own sheets. Maddie is a saint and responds, that's cool. We can match. Maddie lets them know. She's from Oregon, and she came to Oregon College because it was her grandpa's alma mater. Just then, we meet who I shall lovingly refer to as Grandpa Baked Apples. He's thrilled that his granddaughter is going to his alma mater and dropped by to tell her that he's heading home. Maddie leaves to walk her grandpa to the car and invites Kara along. Kara makes it clear to her mom that she doesn't want her coming along, and when Amy suggests staying behind to organize the room, Kara lovingly kicks her mom out. Amy says she'll say goodbye tomorrow. They hug and part ways. As Amy walks back to the car, she passes Noah, who is planting things. He looks up. You driving or is Mr. Uggsy? Amy is nonplussed and keeps walking. He continues to shout, I'm just asking because I'd like to know how much of a head start I'll need. She responds, you better start now. And he chuckles and walks off with his wheelbarrow. So funny.
It's hilarious. A little later, Noah, the gardener, and his friend Bert are rowing crew. I don't know if that's what it's called, but they got a big ass expensive looking boat and they're taking it out on the water to get some exercise. And I have to say, I admire people that require large equipment to exercise because I can barely be bothered to work out with nothing. And when you have the prep work and the heavy stuff that you have to take out to different locations to use them, it's just like, wow, I'm impressed.
Yeah, I agree. I'm right there on the same page with you. I'm lucky if I get my shoes tied. So
yeah, I went out with my sister and some of her friends, and some of her friends had boats. And so they're like, let's take the boats out on the lake. And I was like, that sounds like a lot of fun, which was once you get the boats on the lake, but the driving there and the putting the boat in the boat launch and all the stuff that goes along with it. I was just like, this is just too much trouble. I don't think I'd ever want a boat.
You're like, what happened to just like an inflatable raft that we can just kind of dive into and, you know, paddle a little bit? I think that'll
work.
As
long as somebody inflates it for me. That's also too much trouble. So while they're walking out to the water, Bert asks Noah to come over for dinner. Cheryl's friend Amy's in town and he thinks that they'll really hit it off. Noah says, hard pass. I'm washing my hair. Kurt tells him, oh, come on, dude. Amy's awesome and single and just dropped her daughter off at school. This seals the deal. And Noah says, hell no. I deal with parents all the time and not interested. Bert gives him a little more shit about his dating life. Noah assures him that his dating life is fine, but it's pretty much non-existent. Bert chastises him, saying, you're not dating anyone that you can fall in love with, which threw me off. I don't think I've ever seen two heterosexual men talking about love. It's usually like, she's the right one. Like, they don't talk like, you're just not dating somebody you could fall in love with. Have you experienced that, Corinne?
Yeah, I've experienced that, and I liked their conversations.
I'm not saying I didn't like them. I'm just like, I've never seen one like that out in the wild. Like in Hallmark movies, and they're like talking about love, two men, very like seriously talking about love, and I've just not been around guys that do that, I guess.
You know, just think of the rom-com gents.
Uh-huh. Bert calls Noah a tumbleweed, and he must be because he tumbles his ass onto the water and rows with his friend. Meanwhile, at the house, Cheryl and Amy are preparing dinner. Cheryl, who's married to Bert, and Amy, who we've spoken about previously, are friends from college. And I'm embarrassed to say that this is the part that took me a while to realize that that's the Amy that Bert was trying to set Noah up with. I did not catch that the whole first time of the movie. And the second time, I was halfway through and I was like, oh, you're Amy. Oh. Mm. So the ladies are preparing food and Amy is regaling her friend with how quickly her daughter bolted out of the car and into her college life. Cheryl can sympathize. Her son's only 5 and she's dreading him going to college so much that she decorated his room in blue and orange, which are, of course, Oregon State colors. Well, Amy admits, I was hoping she would warm up to some L.A. schools, but a friend of mine, she says, looking pointedly at Cheryl, wooed her up north. Mm, not sorry, Cheryl mumbles behind a glass of wine. And I'm hoping to woo her mother, too. I mean, I could really use you up here to coordinate events. You were always so good at that in college.
Want to be part of a throuple?
You're looking for the next step and chapter in your life. Why not make it a threesome?
Yeah.
Hmm?
Throuple all the way.
I love how you think, Corinne.
Well, you know.
Amy contemplates this, but not for long, because Cheryl's son decides to scream and race up and down the kitchen. Across town, Noah is eating alone in front of his TV and definitely not washing his hair. He flips through the channels and nature shows until he lands on one that talks about tumbleweeds. Tumbleweeds disperse their seeds in unconventional ways, the voiceover says. Noah throws up his hands and hollers, "Ugh! Seriously?" And I'm hoping that it's because his friend called him a tumbleweed and not because he disperses his seed in unconventional ways, too. While Noah is dining solo at his house, Amy, Bert, Cheryl, and their son are having dinner together. Cheryl's phone bings, and Bert scolds her. They have a no-phone rule at the table. That she can't help it. She has to take the helm of the Harvest Festival since she's so short-staffed. And she looks directly in her bestie's eyes. Because somebody doesn't want to work with me. Amy doesn't understand what the big deal is with the Harvest Festival. Cheryl explains that the Harvest Festival is your standard college autumn fair. But it's been in the red for the past couple of years. And the school is threatening to cancel it if they don't have a successful year. Well, why isn't it successful? Amy asks, and Cheryl divulges that it's because the person running it puts more emphasis on harvest and less on the festival, a.k.a. it's a snooze fest. Mm. Now, don't get me wrong. Professor Ferris is wonderful, but he's not focusing on profit. And I'm serious. I could really use you. You are a natural planner. You did it in college and for all Kara's school events. And I need a natural. Amy's still dubious, so Cheryl offers, why don't you just do the Harvest Festival for me, and then in 6 weeks when it's over, you can decide what your next step is. Mm-hmm. Not permanent, totally temporary. Where would I even live, she asks, and Cheryl pshaws. I deal with short-term rentals all the time, and I have the perfect place for you. Fine, Amy relents. I just need to check with Kara first to make sure it's okay with her. And maybe this is why I love this movie so much, because it has a super nice relationship with mom and daughter. And some people crave the romance in Hallmark movies, and I crave the healthy parental relationships.
Aww. I really like how she was like, okay, but I need to check with my daughter first. And when she talks with her daughter, she's actually like super, no, seriously, if you don't want me to, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. And Amy adds, I also want to meet this Professor Ferris. Dun, dun, dun.
The next day, Amy goes out to the campus farm to do recon. She's walking down a rocky dirt road in heels, very L.A., and yells at a guy on a bulldozer, asking him Have you seen Professor Ferris? Guy hops down saying, at your service, moves to the front of the bulldozer, and Professor Ferris is Noah!
The evil wheelbarrow guy! Dun, dun, dun.
The nemesis of Mr. Hugsy! They eye each other, and he says, if you're looking for Mr. Hugsy, he's not here. But I've got to get going. I need to plant some broccoli before the event planner gets here. She cocks her head to the side, raises an eyebrow, and his brain hamster, who has set up a corkboard in his head, starts connecting all the points with red string. String everywhere. Because first, he realizes that she is the event planner, and second, he realizes that this is the woman who Bert was trying to set him up with. Dun, dun, dun,
dun. And third, I'm sure that Amy was really sorry that she told Noah the name of Mr. Hugsy, because this is the third fucking time he's used that bear's name as a joke. And I'm just like, let it go.
Oh, for real.
Noah, let it go.
This was like the whole me being irritated, like, oh, this guy's going to be nagging her throughout the entire thing. Like, so funny.
Yes, the Mr. Hugsy jokes and the evil eyes. And I'm like, I'm not going to like this guy. I'm not going to like him.
I'm not going to. Oh, hi.
We're not there yet. We're not there yet. Shh. We're not there yet.
Amy tries reaching out. I came by to see if we could work together. Noah brushes her off. Yeah, I'm just planning on doing what we've done in previous years, so I'm good. Amy tries again. I actually don't think that's going to work. The Harvest Festival under your purview has lost money. And if it doesn't make money this year, they aren't going to reauthorize it next year.
Wait, what?
Noah is surprised. He had no idea about the financial aspects of the festival. My job was to look pretty and make sure the campus farms and local farms were highlighted, creating connections and exposure to the larger community. Amy counters, well, my job is to make sure that the festival makes money and draws in the community. I want to put the fun back into Funstival.
Funstival.
How do you like my terrible joke?
No, is that what they call it? The Funstival. The Harvest Funstival.
The Harvest Funstival. When he was doing it, it was a festival, but when she does it, it's a Funstival. There's so much fun.
Oh my God. I want to go to the Harvest Funstival.
Noah plants his feet firmly in the field. Well, I'll tell you, if you take all of the School of Egg stuff out of the Harvest Festival, then there's no reason for my department to even be involved. Amy nods. I'll take that into consideration if I decide to take the job. But first, I need to check with my daughter, Kara. And she walks off, waving goodbye, leaving Noah in the cornfields amidst a very tiny row of small green plants that look like they have a variety of different colored bell peppers scattered at the perimeter to make it look like things are growing. Kara is walking towards her dorm room on the phone with her mom. I just want to make sure you haven't left yet without saying bye. Oh, and can you send my jackets? It's cold here. Before her mom has a chance to respond, Kara walks into her room and ta-da! There's mom hanging with Maddie. She's totally renoed the room, and it looks like it's been on a makeover show. Kara marvels at the room, while I'd be all full of, what the fuck? No, 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 no. No, 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 no. You back away from the room, mom. Leave. Oh my God.
This is where you and I differ very greatly. It might just be because it took me 2.5 days to put a TV mount on my wall that I would completely appreciate somebody just swooping in and being like, let me take care of that for you. And I'm like, oh, bless your heart. Thank you.
See, if we had put the TV mount on the wall together, it would have taken a few hours versus a few days.
Probably the second time, but the first time before we realized it wasn't the proper mount. I'm not even going into it. I'm starting to twitch again.
Oh, I'm good at looking at those things and figuring that kind of stuff out. So,
which is why I'd also let you redecorate my dorm room, too. If you came in and were like, I'm going to rock the shit out of this, I'd be like, well, you know what? If I don't like it, I can change it after you finish it. But I'm okay with you going ahead and taking the lead and doing what you do the best.
Suddenly, your like chic room has changed to Hello Kitty chic. You're like, I don't know. The big red bow on my bed is a little over the top.
See, but they agree, like, I'm sure Kara had her stuff that she chose that she brought to the dorm room. So you wouldn't be allowed to be like, oh, these really nice 300 count sheets are just going to go in the trash because you need my Melody bright pink and all the accessories to go with it.
Amy and Kara step outside for a private talk on a park bench, and Amy runs her temporary job opportunity by her daughter and assures her that if Kara isn't 100% on board, she will totally go back home. Kara is a saint and tells her mom she should take the job. Amy shows up for her first day on the job with cookies. It turns out that the room she walks into is her office, but it looks more like a large break room with a desk at one end.
Mm-hmm.
She's brought fancy fall-themed cookies that I'm guessing she has baked herself, because at first I thought when she walked in that she was coming for a meeting with lots of different people, and that's why
she's in that big-ass room.
Yes. She's in this big-ass room, and I was just like, oh, she must be just going into a meeting room, and that's why she brought the cookies. And then I realized, oh, no, that's supposed to be her office. Okay, sure.
So two things that we've realized in the last few episodes is that Hallmark does not do skating rinks well or offices well, because in our last episode, that gal got an office renovation, which looked like they just turned her desk around to face the other wall.
Her corner office was not a corner office at all. It was still a little galley office. Oh, cheated. She was cheated. She's brought fancy fall themed cookies that I'm guessing she has baked and decorated herself, because she's that type of woman. Noah comes by dressed to teach, wearing a sports coat with leather elbow patches, pants, also pants, and hands of grabbing for cookie goodness. Amy says she's...
I need to see that on a shirt. Pants, also pants.
Amy says she used her accounting experience to look at the past few years of the festival line items and budgets, and they need more sponsors, and their existing sponsors need to donate more, particularly if they're going to integrate in fun and games to draw crowds. Noah is opposed to pumpkin games, but not opposed to pumpkin cookies, as he has one in his mouth, but has never played pumpkin games. So she invites him out on Saturday for a little pumpkin-y surprise.
I kind of call bullshit on those cookies, because those look like the gourmet cookies that take you like 10 minutes to decorate just one. A la like one of the people I follow on Instagram, Semi-Sweet Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but he does the cookies and he does it in fast motion, and that shit is hard and it's intricate and it's detailed. And the fact that she did all of those cookies in the tin probably would have taken her about 12 to 13 hours.
It kind of reminded me of Kathy, our next door neighbor, who would make special cookies for Halloween that she would pass out.
She made chocolate lollipops with like a Halloween mold. Oh, Mrs. Benevich. She was so awesome.
Yeah, she was. She was like our grandma in between mm-hmm. us.
She was the neighborhood grandma.
Those were the days to remember.
So what Amy has invited Noah to is, dun, 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 he's going to go pumpkin bowling with her.
Ooh.
They go to a field where makeshift bowling alleys are sectioned off using hay bales, and he tries to roll a small pumpkin towards 5 bowling pits to knock them over. He hits nothing. He sucks at it. He's getting his ass owned by a 5-year-old that's bowling right next to him. I just have to say that I do a lot of graphic design for bowling alleys, therefore I am very familiar with bowlers and how temperamental they are about their lane qualities, so I just gotta call bullshit on those big-ass stems that are on those pumpkins. I mean, if you're going pumpkin bowling, wouldn't you want round, smooth pumpkins versus the big stemmy ones?
I think you're putting a little too much thought into it. I think you've been indoctrinated into the big bowling ethos. You've been listening a little bit too much to big bowling, and and as the little 5-year-old said to Noah, you gotta use the stem. Use the stem to bowl with it. And once mm-hmm. they use the stem, bam, strikes left and right, left and right.
Okay, we're going pumpkin bowling. It's on. It's on, motherfucker. Amy takes her turn after Noah completely sucks at bowling, and she's obviously done this before because she knocks over those pins like a boss. Noah, not to be outdone, takes a second try, and instead of rolling the pumpkin, he throws it like a baseball, and he still sucks. But still, they have fun. And later, they find a food truck and dine nearby, and Noah admits he had a good time.
Aww.
As Amy and Noah are eating on the food truck, I notice that Amy, I'm going to try not to, from here on out, dub her as the nibbler. Because every scene that she's eating, and there's already been two or three in this movie so far, she just takes a little tiny piece of food and puts it right between her two front teeth and just nibble, 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 nibble.
That's like my Hallmark pet peeve. They frequently have people being like, oh, yes, watch me eat.
Yeah. I'm just going to touch it to my teeth. That's just enough. Just a little dab. Just a little taste. Just a little crumb on the tongue.
I know. I'm like, I don't care if they do a spit take afterwards, but put some food in your mouth.
Yeah. Was that one right in front of me? Where she did the hot wing contest?
Janelle Parrish. That's how you eat. Hero. Yes.
Janelle Parrish can fucking eat on camera. And she's my favorite on-camera eater. Amy still tries to convince Noah that the draw of the pumpkin games is that they bring people in, hence making more money. She says, you have to make them forget that they're at a fundraiser, and I should know. I run hundreds of them for my daughter's school, and I couldn't help it. I really threw myself into being a mom after my husband died. Noah gasps, oh, I am so sorry to hear that. And Amy looks touched and says, thank you. And asks, so, Professor Ferris, where did you grow up? Brooklyn, he says matter-of-factly. Really? You don't have an accent. And he shrugs, well, a few years in Stanford will fix that right up. And I call bullshit. You grew up in Brooklyn. You attend Stanford for, what, 2 or 3 years? And that just magically takes your accent away? Grim thoughts. I know you don't sound like you're from Boston anymore. What was your secret?
Oh, my secret for my, yes, for my Boston. Uh-huh. Yeah, getting rid of my Boston accent was really hard, but somehow I managed to do it. All the original parts. Yeah, you don't want to hear my treatise on the ever homogenization of the English language in the United States due to the media. So I
Amy seems impressed. What brought you to Stanford? She asks, and he looks at her square in the eye. A bowling scholarship, he says seriously. No, she laughs. Really? And he says, no, I actually had a rowing scholarship. I was going to major in finance, and then my freshman year, a classmate took me to Yosemite, and I just fell in love with nature, and it was over for me. So I quit business and just traveled to try to take in all that the world had to offer. Well, why'd you stop traveling? Amy asks, and he shrugs. If you ask Bert and Cheryl, I never really did. Every few years, I go off to a new school. So, she clarifies, you're not exactly on the tenure track. He shakes his head. Nope. But sometimes I see what Bert has with Cheryl and Connor, their son, and I wonder. His voice drifts off, so Amy adds, but you're ready to move on, just as his phone buzzes and he apologizes. Oh, I'm so sorry. I have a meeting I have to get to. They part ways awkwardly. Cheryl asks for some more insight into the donors that she can solicit for funds, and he challenges her to a pumpkin bowling rematch at the Harvest Festival.
Ooh,
and they part ways smiling, a little more than when they first got there. After the pumpkin bowling, Amy goes to a short-term rental that Cheryl arranged. That's a hard word to say, apparently.
I'm glad I'm not the only one having issues, although still, mine were much larger than yours.
Ooh, I don't know. I put an extra 7 syllables in the word Cheryl. Short-term rental that Cheryl arranged, and it's gorgeous, fully furnished. Amy does some light unpacking, puts groceries away, arranges flowers in a vase, and makes herself at home. And then she starts working on some Harvest Festival shit.
Ooh.
The next day, Amy goes to the campus, specifically the Agriculture Center, where she sees her daughter Kara in the distance, thinks about saying something, but doesn't, and walks away. Good mom.
Mom.
And she goes into the barn, where Noah finds her. What are you doing here? He asks. I thought we were going over all that donor stuff tomorrow. Oh, we are, she confirms. I just wanted to see where the best place was for the stage. Stage? Noah asks incredulously. Yes, she says brightly. Right now it's between Molly Sheep and Mercury in retrograde. Although Mercury's better, I'm kind of nervous about booking a band that may portend disaster. Mm-hmm. Band? He asks again. Why don't we just play music over the speakers like we did last year? Because, she argues, then you can't dance. Where are you going to dance? Not in my barn. It's not yours, she counters. It's the school's unless there's something you're not telling me. And then he proceeds to throw the adult professor equivalent to a temper tantrum. This is all my stuff. I keep all my stuff here. You can't move it because I need my stuff in this big barn.
Does he have a lot of stuff? Is it his?
He's got a lot of stuff, a lot of important stuff, a lot of stuff that needs to stay in the barn. But Amy's not swayed. I was thinking it's not baseball season, so I thought we could ask the baseball coach to park some of your bigger things in the field and then store everything else up in the rafters. Noah scoffs. Pah! Good luck asking Coach Carter to use his field. Amy gets a knowing gleam in her eye. Oh, don't worry. I will. Just you wait.
Okay, what baseball coach in their right mind is going to let a bunch of heavy equipment onto a green grassy field in Oregon where it rains a lot, so those wheels will be like sinking into the top of the soil and ruining the field, is my question.
Well, Coach Carter, apparently.
She does a little winky winky and he's like, oh
yeah. You can park your tractor anywhere you want, ma'am. Professor Fair is perhaps trying to get one up on Amy, who seems to be controlling the situation. Very nicely says, you know, you were showing me all the finer points of the festival half. I think I need to teach you about the harvesting part. She smiles, and then we cut to a commercial. And I would like to think for those few minutes while we're watching Metamucil commercials that she says, not on your life. I don't need a professional man splaining farms to me because I'm owning your ass in every single aspect.
But I am.
But of course she doesn't say that in anywhere but my head. As when we come back from commercial, it winds up to Professor Ferris is showing her the ins and outs of farming by taking her to a farm? No, he takes her to a farmer's market.
Totally the same. Totally the same.
Totally the same. Totally the same. And I assure you, Noah, there's plenty of farmer's markets in LA I know firsthand. But he needs to be in the element to tell her about the 80-20 rule, which is farmers locally grow 80% of their crops and bring in 20%, blah, 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 blah. Not very helpful information when Kara and Maddie both call out to them. Mom! They're running an apple stand and Amy goes over there happily to talk to her daughter and her roomie, Maddie. Maddie Gabby Douglas, I put in my notes. It winds up that Maddie's helping her grandpa baked apple, Douglas Seaton, run his apple stand. Oh, Amy gasps. He's one of our sponsors. I was actually going to ask him to increase his donation this year. Noah pipes up. Oh, yeah. Is Douglas at the orchard? Maddie nods. He is every Saturday. Great, Noah pipes up. Now I can show you some real farming on an actual farm and not a farmer's market. Yay. They go to the Seaton Apple Farm. And I experienced my second most favorite typo that I've ever had when I was making a podcast outline, because instead of saying the Seaton Farm, my iPad decided to correct it to Satan Farm. Anyways.
Do you not know about the fall of Adam and Eve and how it was all around a fucking apple? I mean.
Well, I guess that's fair. Satan Farm.
Yeah. Just stating it how it is. Devil apples.
They go to see some devil apples, and while they're there, Noah schools Amy on some apple growing techniques. Planting, Noah says, as they're crouched on the ground in between rows of apple trees, is the most important part of farming. Really? Professor, so far I am not impressed with the wisdom he's spitting at Amy. And, he adds, seeds go through a period of dormancy before the ripening process. Oh! Amy smiles, I can totally relate to that. Noah smiles, well, then maybe it's your time to grow. That was a little bit of a better tidbit than that planting is the most important part of farming, yeah. I must say.
Drinking water is the most important part of being hydrated.
Eating is the most important part of being nourished.
Did you notice when they were in the dirt? So he was just using his hands in the dirt, but she had these like brand new pink gloves on her hands. And I just hypothesized that she was unwilling to touch the dirt.
Well, that's Amy. You know how Amy is. So Noah and Amy plant some seeds. They cover them with soil. They have a nice moment and some friendly conversation. She asks, so when will we see the results? And Noah gestures to the mound of dirt. Well, by next spring, we should see some saplings, but only a small percentage of these trees will grow fully, and it'll be years until they bear fruit. And he chuckles. I know I'm brimming with analogies right now. But it's true that sometimes things take a while to be ready, and I have to wonder if he's talking about the trees or himself.
I always thought he was talking about her.
Oh, I thought he was talking about himself.
Well, I love your take. Like, when you said that, there was an explosion in my head where I was like, oh!
Satan, apples, Adam and Eve! Oh my God, it's all making sense! It circles back around!
It goes all the way to the top!
And of course, their next step of farming is apple picking. As they walk through the trees with baskets in hand, Noah looks at her and says, I'm gonna bet you've never been apple picking before. Well, I have in the supermarket, she says. How hard can it be? Don't you just reach up and pick one? She does this, and instead of picking a single apple off the tree, she picks a branch and some leaves, and I'm not entirely sure there's any apples in that little bundle that she pulled. Noah gives her apple picking 101, at least I'm assuming he does, because she's next on the ladder picking like a pro. So, she asks, I was meaning to ask you at the food truck if you're ready to move on yet. He shrugs. Maybe. I have an offer from the University of Sydney that I'm waiting to hear back on. Really? She says, impressed. What a great opportunity and how exciting. Yeah, he agrees. I worked in Melbourne before and I really liked it there. Oh, well, good luck with that, she says, and promptly gets off the ladder because if there's no chance for a romantic future, he doesn't get a front row seat to her apples. Mm. And by that, I mean her boobs.
Oh!
Which are prominently in front of him when she was up on the ladder.
Ooh.
Well, he says, there's only one other test we have to do. And then he pulls an apple out of the basket and takes a big bite out of it. Amy, in the spirit of it all, takes a big bite too. And they smile at each other through apple-y good bites.
Aww. And she took an actual bite versus like a nibble bite.
She just rubbed her teeth on the apple skin. Yep. Nope. I saw that. After they filled their baskets, they take their apples to a sorting table not far off. Now what? Amy asks. And Noah divulges that the apples will be donated to charity and will need to be held until the holidays when they could be distributed. Agriculture in action. We just need he says, looking around. Obviously, he can't find what he's looking for, so he excuses himself to go find it, which we never find out what it is. Do we ever find out what it is?
No. I'm guessing it's some kind of a basket or something. Scale?
Says he has to go find something.
Yeah, he says he has to go find something. We don't know what it is. It's a mystery. However, when he leaves, Edward, a.k.a. Grandpa Baked Apples, a.k.a. Maddie's grandpa and owner of the orchard, approaches Amy, and they strike up a conversation. Those were not all three separate people. It's all one person, just different ways of referring to them. Amy shares how she likes to use Honeycrisp apples, the type she and Noah picked for baked apples. Grandpa Baked Apples gets a far-off look in his eyes. Wow, I haven't had baked apples in years. Amy's confused. Really? Why not? Have you ever had a baked apple?
I've got so many questions. No, I have not.
Neither have I.
But I will hold my questions for later.
Okay. Until the slow-mo baked apple scene where they rub brown sugar all over each other and start licking in different places.
Of course, she doesn't lick it. She just nibbles.
She just nibbles.
And this was Grandpa Baked Apple's namesake.
Yes, this is how we got to Grandpa Baked Apples, was this whole conversation. He's a grandpa, and he has a thing about baked apples.
Yes, just to point that out, if somebody's like, why the freak did they start calling him Grandpa Baked Apples?
It all comes together now. See your brain hamster in your head. It has the cork board up and there's the red strings and they're all coming together now. It's all tied together. It's all part of the plan. Amy is confused. Really? Why not? Grandpa Baked Apples says, well, they were my wife's signature dish and I don't know if I'm ready to make them myself, you know? Amy is sympathetic. I do. When I lost my husband, not in the mail, but rather when he dieted. Oh, so mail. Not in the mall. I was like, mail. What'd you try and do? Ship them off somewhere? That's a bad idea.
have so many questions. I actually like the male aspect better.
So when Amy
she
lost
mailed her husband.
When she Amy lost her husband, not in the mail, but rather when he died in. It took a long time before she felt comfortable with things going back to the way they were. And still, you know, they're just not the same. Grandpa Baked Apples is somber. How did you deal with it? Amy reflects. Time and honestly throwing myself more into my daughter's life than I probably should have. Grandpa Baked Apples gets it. I understand, and sorry to get so tender. My granddaughter said there was something you wanted to see me about. She chickens out about asking him about upping his sponsorship, not wanting to make things seem transactional over that tender moment, and instead says, I just wanted to let you know that you have such a beautiful orchard. They exchange pleasantries and say goodbye, and I think that was a smart move on her part, instead of being like, now that we talked about our dead spouses, so how about giving me more money? Winky, winky.
I don't know. I might have just said it just to get it out of the way. Be like, so now that we're buddies, and bonded over dated spouses,
oh.
I feel like I can be real with you.
You have that way about you, though. I think that you could really make it work. I don't think she could make it work as well as you could.
Yeah. If he brought it up and I had it in and I'm like, I'm just going to bleh it all over you. Do you want to give me more money for the Harvest Festival? Because we're going to put red and we're going to black and then it's gonna, and then we need more money. Okay?
I bought these candy bars. Would you like to buy one for $1?
They're $2 now. I know.
Noah and Amy go back to her place and make baked apples, apparently with some of the apples that were supposed to be for the shelter. ?
Okay. Have you had baked apples?
I have not.
Okay. Because it looks like they just core out the apples and then they shove it full of like brown sugar and cinnamon and God knows what else. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then they just bake them.
Yeah.
And then how do you eat them? You just cut into them?
You just cut into them. Yeah.
I was picturing like an apple crisp, like, you know, you slice mm-hmm. it and then you put all the stuff on top and then you bake it like in a pie tin. So they're like all nice and evenly baked and distributed with all the goodness instead of just having that concentrated core of stuff that does not permeate to the outside of the apples, I'm pretty sure. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong, because I just think that's a very poor way to try to bake an apple.
I think that you would end up with a really gooey center, and so the stuff that didn't get baked into the apple, then you could use as kind of a dipping sauce.
I think we're just going to have to try this out for ourselves, Corinne.
Yes.
We're going to have to bake some apples.
Maybe it will be one of our Patreon moments in the future. Baking apples.
All the stuff that we see them eating on Hallmark channels that we don't believe for a second.
They laugh, smile, banter, and smell brown sugar together. It's a magical time that ends with Noah leaving with about 20 baked apples.
Maybe that's what's going to the homeless shelter. Maybe he's taking the baked apples to the homeless shelter instead of just the raw regular apples.
Well, I have a theory.
Okay.
I don't know what he's doing with all those apples. But I have a theory about some of them. Now, they don't say this in the movie. I suspect this part has been cut for time, but I really think he's delivering one of those trays of baked apples to Grandpa Baked Apples.
Oh.
Yeah. I like that literally theory. I'm not doing some kind of wild hypothesis. I actually think that this literally happened in the movie. They just had to cut it.
I will accept it.
The baking apple montage blends with a scene and montage of Amy conquering all things Harvest Fest. Amy bribing the baseball coach with pecan squares? Check. Noah and Amy mapping out Harvest Fest details? Check. Noah and Amy flyering the town? Check. After a hard day of flyering, they stop at a bar and get a flight of fall cider drinks. Their server, Chloe, presents the drinks. There are three different drinks. One is fire cider with jalapeno and lime. Another called Mom's Kitchen with honey and pear, which sounds gross. Chloe's personal favorite, fall spice with cinnamon, cloves, and nutmeg. The ciders are delicious, and Amy thinks they should have them do a booth. They nurse their beverages and have idle chit-chat, enhanced by moments of silence. Then Amy goes for the jugular. What? would a man like you, who teaches agriculture in action, refuse to put down roots of his own when he works so hard in cultivating roots on a daily basis?
Well, the analogies in this movie get down.
I know. This movie is very analogy rich. Noah takes a long drink and looks at her. I don't refuse to. I just haven't found a reason to yet. He says, looking deeply at her with an implied winky winky. At this point in the movie, they're metaphorically dancing around each other. Amy asking him about Australia and not putting down roots and silently saying, "What about me? Don't you want to put down roots for me?" And Noah asking her about if she's going to return to LA and silently saying, "Why don't you stay for me?" And I think there's altogether too much unsaid between the both of them. And I want to say to Noah, who hurt you? We already know that her husband died it, and so that's why she's hurt, but damn.
Yeah, what's Noah's excuse?
Peter Pan syndrome is Noah's excuse.
The next day, Amy meets Cheryl for coffee, and Cheryl gushes over what a great job Amy's doing with the Harvest Festival. Amy admits, "It's been easy with Noah. He's been doing a lot of promoting." "Okay, good," Cheryl says. "I'm so glad you guys are getting along." "You are getting along, right?" Amy gets a distant look in her eyes. "You like him," Cheryl accuses. And Amy finally comes clean. She has a little crush, but nothing's happened. "Oh my God," her bestie proclaims. "That's like you shouting it from the rooftops." But Amy tries to shut that shit down. "It's been so long since I've had a little crush that I don't even know how I feel about it." "Well, I'm thrilled," Cheryl says. "Ever since your husband died, you've been pouring all of your attention into Kara, and I get it. But I want to see some attention going back to my best friend." "Oh, thank you for that," Amy says. "But it's never going to happen. I live in LA, and he's about to move to, like, a different planet." "That's just logistics," Cheryl argues. "Yes," Amy agrees, "but logistics play a huge part in relationships."
How is she supposed to get laid with him on the other side of the planet?
He's got interesting ways to spread his seed because he's a tumbleweed.
Nice one.
Amy agrees, "but logistics play a huge part in relationships." Cheryl waves her hands in surrender. "Okay, okay, let's move on to a safer subject. How's the Harvest Fest going?" "Oh, great," Amy says genuinely. "I got Noah to agree to pumpkin bowling." "What?" her friend says in disbelief. "That's practically a miracle." "Yeah," Amy nods, "but we don't have enough money for all the booths we need." "Well," Cheryl says slyly, "what if you had another $5,000 from a last-minute donor? Seton Farms." "Oh my gosh," Amy exclaims. "That's enough for the booths and the corn maze?" "Wait," her friend interrupts. "You got Noah to agree to a corn maze?" "Not yet."
Oh, and Seton Farms, once again, is Grandpa Baked Apples Farm.
Grandpa Baked Apples Farms. And you would think in the next scene we would be seeing Amy in her kitchen whipping up some baked goods to bribe Noah with, but she's not. She's in front of him as he's unloading hay bales out of his truck. "Absolutely not," he protests loudly. I could just imagine the little brain hamster in Noah's head saying, "First you make me move all of my stuff out of my barn, and now you want me to harvest my corn?"
"There's so much stuff."
"And my stuff. You make me move my stuff and me doing the things that I don't want to do and move my stuff." "Besides," he says, "corn mazes take forever, except Bink and Hallmark Land." Amy is digging in her heels. "We need this. The music, the games, the corn maze will bring in more people, and you're not going to throw it away. You're just harvesting the corn early, and you could still use it. If we don't do this, Noah, we may not have enough funds to continue the Harvest Festival next year." He squints at her and is not relenting. "Can you assure me that all the corn is harvestable right now?" "Well, no," she says. Then Noah counters, "I'm going to say no. My students work so hard to plant this corn, I'm not going to ruin it for a one-day festival. What'll that be teaching my students?" She turns, looks at him square in the eye and says, "It will teach them to think long term," and then walks away in a huff. A huff, I tell you.
You know what she doesn't realize? Noah, every night, he's out there with his violin playing sweet music to the corn so that the corn will grow super sweet and super good and super crispy.
That's the most important part of farming, currency. It's playing the violin softly to the corn at night.
Yes. Oh my God, why aren't we farmers? We know everything.
I can't even keep a houseplant alive in my house. Let alone acreages and acreages of vegetables. Later that day, Noah's helping his friend Bert build bunk beds. So, he asks, have you heard back from Sydney? Yep, Noah confirms, but I'm not sure if I'm going to take it. What? His friend asks, confused. Why not? Well, he shares, it's something that Amy implied. She said I don't think long term. Bert, not even looking up, nods. She's absolutely correct. What? What do you mean? Noah asks. His friend puts down his pencil, looks him square in the eye, and says, ever since I knew you at Stanford, you've been moving from place to place and always said you'd settle down. Yeah, Noah agrees, when it's right. That's the problem, his friend counters. You never stay in one place long enough to find out if it's right or not. Mm. Bert picks his pencil back up, puts his attention on the bed, and says, now, are you ready for the next step? Noah examines the floor and after an excruciating long pause says, yeah, I think I am. No, Romeo, his friend chastises. Are you ready for the next step, making this bed? Noah chuckles. Oh. Yeah, touche, my friend, touche.
Oh, I love that bunk bed scene. I think it was a good one.
Mm-hmm. And this is when Noah slowly morphs from looking a little crazy to more attractive. Crazy to attractive.
Oh, I know. Things start getting... Ooh, ooh. After that thought-provoking conversation with Bert, Noah gives Amy a call, but we'll never find out what he was originally calling about because he's completely distracted by Amy, who says,
hello?
Oh, Amy, are you okay?
I just have a cold, I'll be fine. Why are you calling?
Noah's brain hamster starts flying on the wheel, trying to figure out what to say. I was just wondering where you were going to be in the next couple of hours. Amy sighs. On my couch? Kind of feeling gross, but okay. Why?
Cut to nighttime doorbell ringing. Amy answering the door in a sexy negligee. And Noah... No.
She's not in a sexy...
She's not. Unless that sexy negligee is made out of snotty tissues.
Ooh, that sounds hot. That would have been like if I had come and surprise visited you for Christmas. You would have... Wearing a snotty tissue outfit would have been so beautiful.
You don't know me. Look at, I'm going to reach into my pocket right now. And not only do I have not one, not two, but six tissues in my pocket. I can make a whole wardrobe with this right here.
Tamara's eyes gleam with the possibilities of it all.
So she answers the door. She's wearing just comfy clothes. And there in front of her is Noah on Amy's doorstep with a beautiful orange La Crusette pot filled with chicken soup. Chicken soup, he offers. Amy invites him in and tries to take care of the soup, but Noah won't have it. You're so busy taking care of everyone else. I wonder who takes care of you. So now it's your turn to be taken care of. Sit. I've got this. Amy reluctantly sits on the couch amidst her nest of tissues. He serves her up a bowl of soup and she happily spoons it up. Noah takes a moment to check out the fire and then joins her sitting on the couch. And I can tell where you and I, Tamara, are in full-on pandemic life right now because I keep on wondering where the masks are.
I thought the same thing when Amy gave her daughter that big thing of hand sanitizer and she was like, Mom! And I'm like, what do you mean, Mom? I want one of those shit.
Seriously.
It's a good thing to have. You better thank your mother.
But he's not here to talk about a pandemic or see if he can get some sweet, snotty lovin'. Nope. The other reason why he came by was to apologize for being a pain in the ass about the corn maze. She pshaws it, acknowledging that it was a big ask. But he is sweet and says he's going to find a way to make it work. And I'd say in this context, he knows how to woo a woman big time. Chicken soup and a corn maze? Sign me up! Within this context. On his way out, he insists that she sit and he'll lock the door on his way out. He tucks an afghan around her and looks at her with heart eyes and, oh, I can't even. It's so sweet. My experience with exes has been me being like, I'm really sick. Can you go to the store and get me some cold medicine? And then being like, you know, I'm just not feeling very well right now either. So me being like, motherfucker, you are just fine. Suck it up. Take a little bit of care of me.
I know nothing about that. Like at the beginning of this podcasting adventure, this beginning of this podcasting adventure that we took together when I had my dental surgery and I could not eat solid food for 2 weeks. And Dan's like, I'm going to make you a steak, but I'm going to cook it so it's really soft. I can't eat anything solid. Okay, I'll make you some chicken then. I motherfucker. I'll cut it up into small pieces. God damn it.
He's like, what if I chew it first and then baby bird it into your mouth? You're like, why can't you just make me delicious soup? Why?
No. I'll puree the shit out of it. I did do that a couple of times. It was not good.
Ugh.
Whatever he made, I pureed it in a blender and what?
So we are pledging, Tam and I are both pledging to make better choices in the future. We're going to pretend to get sick for whoever we're dating and see how they respond. And if it's not good, they're gone.
Yeah. I'm going to be on the couch and then running to the door looking for the pot and the chicken soup. Nope, not yet. Okay, go back to the couch.
Where's my corn maze? Where's my corn maze? Next thing we know, Noah is making a fucking corn maze with inspirational music playing in the background. I'm watching it in... I'm watching it on the wings of love when the zero turn, the machine he was driving, runs out of gas. Meanwhile, Kara comes by her mom Amy's place. But this time, the roles are reversed. Kara says, is everything okay, Mom? You haven't called or texted or anything in a while. Amy looks up at her placidly. Well, I had a cold last week. Kara does a double take. A cold? Why didn't you tell me? I could have helped you. Amy stammers, her brain hamster working overtime. She doesn't want to say that she's sprung on Noah and therefore utterly distracted. I've been working on the festival and I said I'd give you space. Kara rolls her eyes. Space? I could use, but I don't need that much space, especially if you're sick. Amy is surprised by her daughter's concern. And I will say that because Amy was busy with the job and Noah, she was way less in her daughter's hair living closer than she would have been in LA with nothing but time on her hands. They take some time to catch up when Amy gets a text. Amy secretly smiles at her phone. Kara asks, who texted you? Amy shares, it's Professor Ferris, a.k.a. Noah, to us gentle listeners. And there's a pic of Noah looking adorable on the zero turn. Kara's brain hamster starts rolling out the cork board and grabbing the red string. She's connecting the dots. Kara says, so, have you been hanging out a lot? Amy plays it super cash. Oh yeah, but that's just because we're working together right now. Her phone alerts her again and she flips it over to reveal a picture of Noah pouting on the zero turn with the message, ran out of gas. Please help. Kara encourages her mom to help him. And when Amy leaves, Kara looks over at Mr. Hugsy. Hey there, Mr. Hugsy. Hey. How do you like it over there with Amy? Or would you prefer to hang out with Kara asking for a friend? Amy enters into the field with her can of gas and Noah on the cell phone directing her. But after a bit, they lose track of where she is on the map and resort to playfully yelling, Marco!
Polo!
Marco!
Polo!
To each other. Once they find each other in the field, he fills up Zero Turn / Corn Smasher with gas and invites her to ride with him. She's reluctant, but because they both have slender hips, they magically can squish into the one-seater Zero Turn next to each other, and it's cute. They ride back to the entrance, laughing and enjoying each other's company. And they do an aerial shot of a corn maze that would have people
lost for a really long time over several acres, and I think they're confused because there's no way that that was the corn maze that Noah was making. At least it better not be. It was a weird-ass corn maze.
And I call bullshit on it. I'm like, there is no way he did that. A, and then unless that zero-turn thingamabopper can completely obliterate the corn from ever existing on the path because it was just completely dirt.
Yes.
And also, do you think those zero-turn whatever the honking thing he was driving doesn't have a gas gauge?
It might not.
I wondered about that.
Yeah.
It put me in mind of my roommate. He's in his mid-20s and he bought his first car brand new a few years back, and so I was telling him about the wonderful pavy car that I'm driving around that Corinne so graciously gave me. And I was like, it's a game changer, it has a gas gauge that tells you exactly how many miles you have. I was always terrified to drive with anything less than a quarter of a tank for many reasons, where I almost ran out of gas in the middle of butt fucking nowhere. And he just kind of looked at me and was like, well, what did you do before you knew how many miles you had left? Because I guess his car has the same feature on his gauge. And I'm like, you guessed, David. You just guessed. And he was like, really? And I'm like, yes. You just had to try to factor in how many miles. And when that gauge got close to the bottom, you either got gas or just drove on a wing and a prayer and hoped it was enough to get you wherever you were going.
Or like my high school boyfriend, where his gas gauge didn't work at all on the old Mustang that he had. He would move forward and brake the car and listen for sloshing.
Oh, well, I guess I could try that too.
True story. I don't think the modern cars have it like where you can actually hear the gas in the tank moving around.
I don't think so either.
But you couldn't in the Mustang. I'll tell you that. I'm like David in his 20s with a new car. And I'm like, yeah, my first new car was, in my 40s.
I think I've said it on this podcast before. My very first car cost $500 and was 5 different shades of red. And I used to keep it really, really fucking dirty so you couldn't tell it was 5 different shades of red.
You're a genius. It's perfect. That way it all works out. You have a camo car. Camouflage, you see.
Everyone's like, your car needs a wash. I'm like, no, it doesn't.
I'm sorry that the car that I gave you is only one shade of red. Please forgive me.
I'm very disappointed. I'm just waiting till I get some extra quiche so I can add 4 more reds on there.
Oh, I think we can just go to the paint store and hook you up.
No. I already did that once. I'm good. I already had the multicolored car, the Technicolor.
I know. I was Tamara and the Technicolor
dream car.
Oh, that is glorious. Now I imagine your car just like flying all chitty chitty bang bang style, and I'm a little jealous. So they arrive back, and she has something in her hair, which he kindly gets out for her. They're standing so close, inches away from bumping and grinding proximity, looking into each other's eyes. Noah says, so, you're really going back to L.A. after this? Amy, a little love drunk, distractedly says, yeah, I promised Kara. Noah moves in a little closer. What if you hadn't promised Kara? Amy switches the topic. What about you? He smiles. What about me? And moves in closer. And I'm leaning in closer and closer to the TV. Yes, yes, kiss. There's gonna be a kiss. Interruptus. Womp, 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 womp. It was so hot. It was so hot. And then there was a kiss. Interruptus. When who should interrupt what could have been a really hot makeout sesh, but Grandpa Baked Apples. Amy is very gracious to their donor, thanks him, and shows him around. As they walk off, Noah gets an alert, and it's the University of Sydney welcoming him. He got the job!
Ooh. The next day, Amy's back on campus in her vast, spacious office and gets a phone call. It winds up Mercury in Retrograde, the band that she booked for the Harvest Festival, broke up. So she beelines it straight to Noah's office to regale him with the bad news. He's disappointed, and she's surprised that he's disappointed over not having a band when he didn't want to have one in the first place.
Bam!
In his barn.
Mic drop.
With all his stuff.
The stuff and the stuff?
The stuff and all his things that he had in the barn that she's making a move so she can play music and dance. Ugh.
Ugh.
What? He argues. I like music and dancing. She looks at him questioningly. I do, he proclaims loudly. So then he winds up, he's just set in his ways, and once he opens up to something, he actually enjoys it, and he's just a stubborn ass. Well, she adds, our options are limited. There is a band called McBanjo, and they're not half bad. And if you're interested, they're playing tonight at a place called Pretty Coyote. Do you want to check them out? He does. And they go on a proper date? Question mark? When they go to Pretty Coyote that night, it winds up that the band's not playing there at all. But they hear something across the street. It's music. There's music at the cider place that they frequented a couple of days before. They go inside, and there is a talented gal on the stage singing her heart out, and it's their waitress. They grab a table, and she is rocking the joint. They both agree that she would be perfect for the festival, but Noah says, oh, we just have to conduct one more test. And he drags Amy out onto the dance floor to do some line dancing.
Ooh.
And the song ends, things get slow, and they do some serious, serious slow dancing. All the parts of their bodies are touching. After their dancing, Noah walks Amy home, and as she's proclaiming their new singer is better than the old band they were going to get, he's getting up the nerve. He says he had a real good time, and his favorite part was dancing with her. They're standing on her porch. He leans in to kiss her, and it's another kiss us, interrupt us. Of the highest form, because the interruptus is done by Amy, one of the kissies. She stops him. Noah, she says quietly, I haven't kissed anyone in a long time. So he takes a quick U-turn and plants a kiss on her forehead.
Oh!
Hot, I say sarcastically. What if her forehead hadn't been kissed in a long time too, Noah? Huh? Huh? Consent. Consent!
Okay, but can we take a moment to unpack the consent?
Because, yes, we can.
Because I agree that he potentially did not have forehead consent. However, I will say that this was really good modeling of consent, because they are about to kiss, and she brings up a kind of being uncertain thing. And so he backs away, and then he goes in towards her lipses and pauses, and she pulls away, and then he backs off and he goes for a more generic area on her body. And I thought that was really nice.
You know how I feel about forehead kisses.
Yes. Yes. Unless it's a parent doing a forehead kiss to their child, forehead kisses, not acceptable.
No, I think forehead kisses are acceptable, but not when you're dating and courting and you're like the fresh throes of your relationship. Mm-hmm. It's not like, I just kept picturing in the back of my mind, like if you just went up to her forehead and just went, a tongue in her forehead.
He would really need consent for that. Oh my gosh. He's like, can I teabag you? Do you mind? You know? I think it'd be
my
really
penis
fun.
Is nice and flaccid and unintimidating. After he kisses the shit out of her forehead, he looks at her and says, I changed my mind. That was my favorite part of the evening. They say goodnight and part ways, walking on clouds. He gets in his truck, and she goes inside to cool off on a chair. Just then her brother calls and says he just got an unbelievable offer from the real estate agent to buy her house. And she's conflicted.
Ooh. It's the big setup day for the Harvest Fest. Amy is taking a break and sitting on the freshly built stage, swooning over a picture of Noah, when Noah approaches with a pumpkin spice latte for her. Amy swiftly tucks her phone away and smiles up at him. Thank you. He sits next to her and gives her a thoughtful look. How are you doing? You okay? Amy says. Yeah, I got an offer on my house from an ambitious real estate agent, and it's better than I could have ever imagined. Noah gets a spark of hope in his heart. So, are you going to go for it, or are you still returning to L.A.? Amy says. Well, my life, everything is in L.A. It doesn't make sense for me to move here.
And with those words, it's as if Amy threw a bucket of water on Noah's spark, extinguishing it. Her phone dings, reminding her of an appointment, and she jets off, leaving a very disappointed Noah in her wake. Noah and Bert have another talk post-row together as they dry off the boat. Bert asks him about how his night went with Amy. Noah gets a dreamy look on his face. It was one of the best nights of my life. Amy is really special. Bert can tell that there's something bugging Noah, though. So you had a great night? You got a new job and you're not dancing like Gene Kelly through the boathouse? What's up? Noah responds, Amy, she's not ready to move on. Leave her life in LA. Bert's bummed. I was hoping Amy would give you a reason to stick around. Noah says, yeah, well, not this time. Meanwhile, Amy and Cheryl have a conversation of their own where Amy runs Cheryl down on all the final planning of the event, and Cheryl lets her know that Amy's position has opened permanently as the woman on maternity leave is moving to Oklahoma. Cheryl really wants Amy to take the job, but Amy is firm in her resolve to give Kara her space. Won't even discuss it with her. Amy finds out that Noah has been offered the University of Sydney position, and it all just sounds like a pretty done deal.
Everyone is putting the final touches on the Harvest Festival. Noah looks at Amy longingly from afar. Amy is completely oblivious and happily delegating, making Harvest Fest a beautiful reality. Kara approaches her mom. Hey, Mom, Marcus told me that there was an offer on the house? Thank goodness for meddling brothers, because Kara is talking about the sitch with her mom. Why didn't you tell me? Amy sighs. Well, it's our house, and I'm moving back home after the Harvest Festival, so there's not much to say. Kara looks at her mom in earnest. You know you can sell the house. It's okay, and you got offered the event planning job, didn't you? Amy is puzzled. Did Cheryl tell you that? Kara shakes her head. No, Mom. I figured she'd do anything to keep you here. Plus, you're great at everything you do, so why wouldn't she want you to work for her? Amy throws up some more excuses. What about your independence? I want you to have your freedom. Kara smiles. I like having you around. It's kind of nice having you close by. And as I said before, she'd be so much more up in Kara's business if she was down in LA with nothing to do than when she's actually working and has a focus.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know she'd be like blowing up her phone, texting her all the time. I haven't heard from you for 4 to 5 minutes. What's going on?
Are you okay? Why aren't you answering your phone?
I know that you were supposed to be in Professor Harris's class, but I don't see your dot on the map there, so I'm wondering what's going on. Kara tries gently shoving her mom, Amy, out of the nest so that she'll spread her wings. But Amy isn't making any decisions at the moment. Instead, she gratefully hugs Kara because she's got a pretty awesome daughter. She totally does.
She totally does.
Yeah, Noah passes by and Amy lets Kara know that she'll be right back and jogs over to Noah to tuck.
To tuck. Winky, winky.
Winky, winky. Have you heard of the Lambada, the dirty dancing? Let's make it bump and grind time.
Oh, no. This isn't the 90s.
Oh, no.
When Noah sees Amy approach, his face lights up. The place is looking really great, he says. Very festive. I'm starting to get what you were talking about. She smiles at him. Congratulations, Cheryl told me that the offer from the University of Sydney went through. He nods. Yeah, I'm excited about it. And you, are you heading back to LA soon? She rocks back on her feet, nodding hesitantly. Yep, that's the plan. Well, he says somberly, don't forget to say goodbye before you go. She assures him that she won't. Because, he adds, you've made an impression on me, even though it's been a few weeks, and I'm gonna miss you. She nods, and they walk away from each other before she turns around and calls out, hey, Noah, I'm gonna miss you too. And they smile sadly and go their separate ways.
You're grown-ass adults. It doesn't need to be this way. It doesn't need to be this way. Why don't you just
That's not how it's supposed to happen. That's not how it's supposed to happen. You're supposed to get together and live out the rest of your years arguing over festivals and giving each other passionate forehead kisses.
Tamara and I want our happily ever after. Gosh darn it.
But then we wouldn't have another scene because it would end right there if they actually said what they meant. And finally, we're at the day of the Harvest Festival, and it is hopping. There are tons of people, and everyone seems to be having a good time. Can I just say that how jealous I am of the corn maze, no matter how implausible it is that he did that in that short amount of time?
The corn maze is pretty cool, and I love that they had actually, like, you can negotiate your way accurately through the corn maze by answering questions correctly, like,
I was just going to say that.
Oh, sorry.
That's such a cute idea. No, keep it. Because I did not articulate it well at all. I said learning while getting lost or unlost by answering corn quiz questions. That is such a cute freaking idea. Oh my God.
I loved that.
Me too. And Amy's walking around with her daughter when she sees Noah. He admits that the festival is a success. Not too bad for an accountant from L.A., he jokes. And they all stand there awkwardly before he excuses himself. And Kara senses something is amiss. She asks her mom if everything's okay with Professor Ferris. And she tells her that he's moving to Sydney at the end of the semester. Kara apologizes. Oh, I'm so sorry about that, Mom. And Amy looks confused. Well, I thought you liked him. Amy, feeling uncomfortable, quickly changes the subject. Kara, I have to admit something. I brought Mr. Hugsy, and I know you didn't want him, but I can't find him anywhere now. Kara smiles a little guiltily. Oh, I know. I took him, she admits. I had a midterm that I was nervous about. I came over when you weren't home. I saw him, and I wound up bringing him to my dorm. Amy smiles. A mother knows. And they walk away hugging. Later in the evening, the music is going. People are dancing. Amy and Cheryl see Grandpa Baked Apples, and he is thrilled with his investment. He sold out of apples and got a ton of reservations for people that want to do apple picking after the festival. I just don't know how we're going to top this next year, he says. And Cheryl concurs. Yes, how are we going to top this next year? She asks, looking pointedly at Amy. Amy nods and looks around. Well, I do have some ideas, but you have to offer me the job first. Cheryl nods excitedly. Seriously? Yep, Amy confirms. Kara said it was okay for me to move here. Within reason. And I'm thinking this may be the next chapter of my life. If the offer's still there, of course. Yes, her friend says while hugging her enthusiastically. Yes. And then runs off. Meanwhile, Kara finds Professor Ferris and says she heard he's leaving. Yeah, he confirms. I was just waiting to announce it until after I accepted the offer. Oh, Kara exclaims. You haven't taken the job yet? Nope. Noah admits there's the time difference between here and there, and I think they're on spring break right now. So Kara races off with this news, just as Bert approaches Noah. Bert pushes Noah and says, guess what I heard about Amy? While Kara tells her mom Professor Ferris hasn't taken the job yet, both Amy and Noah are excited by the news. Amy pushes through the crowd to find him, and Noah leaves. Amy starts scanning the crowd for him, and he up and leaves the building. Corinne, thoughts on that? What the fuck?
I just think he had something to do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you do? Outside, yes. When he finds out the love of his life is actually staying in town, he's like, I better go get that hay bale out of the walkway. That's a tripping hazard.
Yep. Ugh. What are your thoughts?
I don't know. That's why I was like, I just does not make any sense to me, because she's just like, Noah. And he's like, I am out of here. I thought for a second that maybe it was all a farce. And then he was like, oh, I love this girl. And I just want like those vacation romances where it's hot and heavy and passionate for a short period of time. But then when there's the possibility of it being long term, you're like, oh, nope. Getting too serious for me. I got to go.
Did he realize that he was in the room with her?
I mean, they talked earlier in the scene.
Yeah, but earlier, like they talked earlier and then they parted ways. So he could have been anywhere.
She could have been anywhere. But I mean, he didn't even like try to look in the room for her. He just was like, I'm out, and bounced.
I think he had to go to the porta potties.
I'm so excited. I got to pee.
Exactly.
Okay. Amy asks Cheryl if she's seen Noah, and Cheryl tells her that he left. So she runs out of the barn but can't see him anywhere. So she begins calling out, Marco! 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 Suddenly from the darkness, she finally hears a Polo! And they meet in the middle underneath the twinkling lights. He asks if she's not moving, and she confirms this. I want to make new memories here and do a job I'm good at. My house in L.A. is just a house, and the only thing keeping it from not being perfect is you not being here. Well, I can fix that, he says quietly. Only if you want, she counters, and they get closer, and the camera angle is not doing Noah any favors because it's slightly above his eye line, and he's looking at Amy like he has a slightly manic expression on his face, like he wants to devour her, literally. But he doesn't want to devour her. He only wants to devour her lips. They move together in slow motion. Their noses brush against one another once, twice, before their lips finally touch and they kiss.
Three times a lady.
And it's a good one. And it's a good one. They reluctantly break apart and Amy confirms, so this means you're staying? Yes, Noah says, smiling. But why, she asks. He looks at her like she's daft before saying, for love, of course. And they kiss again and dance below the lights.
Aww.
And that last little bit was the last time and a very good exclamation mark of when I felt stupid again, because that's why it's called love, of course. The whole first two times I watched it, I was like, maybe it's because they're in college and there's courses and whatnot. So it's love, of course, not because he says love, of course, at the end. Dun, 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 the
I didn't end. Put that together, but I didn't think about why it was named the title anyways, so.
I do. I always like look at the title. I'm like, now, why is it called that right in front of me? Love for real, all that stuff, because they're so similar. It helps like sear it into my memory if I can understand it. So we had a little disagreement about that whole Marco Polo section, because I thought it was ridiculous that she didn't try to call out Noah before she just went straight to Marco, and you thought it was charming.
It was so romantical.
I just, with my obtuse ass, I'd be like, somebody must have lost their kid named Marco. Like, they're trying to find each other in the middle of a corn maze, and I'd be like, Marco, are you out here, Marco? Joining in on the search.
Even if you just done a whole Marco Polo with your like besotted one just a couple of days earlier.
Yeah, it would not dawn on me. For like a split second, at least. I would probably get it after maybe the second or third, like he did. But the first Marco, I'd be like, who's Marco? And where is he at? And why is somebody calling his name?
Sure, the first time. But after the first time, I thought it was so charming. I also, though, grew up playing some Marco Polo. So, you know, I'm used to that a little bit. Question mark?
You didn't play Marco Polo with me, bitch. Just like I didn't play the dating phone with you, you didn't play Marco Polo with me.
Oh, please. What is a higher collateral item than dating phone game, dream phone? How are we supposed to know who our boyfriends are without the dream phone?
That's why we're both still single to this day. We didn't play the dream phone game.
Gosh, you're set for another betrayal. So, what did you think of this movie?
I'm going to give this movie a solid 4, which is surprising to me because I did not expect to like it. Mm-hmm. I was halfway through like, oh God, this guy. But he completely changed my mind.
He turns it around.
He totally turns it around. I thought the characters were believable. The two leads are in their 50s, which I also appreciate. Late 40s, early 50s. So I also like seeing like people more our age, like playing the love interests. I thought that was cool. I loved the mom and daughter relationship. I loved the layers and the things that surprised me that multiple times I watched this. So I give it a 4. What do you give it?
Oh, I totally give it 4 dry kisses. Absolutely. It is a solid 4. If you asked me during the first portion of this movie, I would have given it a 2.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the diversity in this movie is rather lackluster, but it does have Gabby Douglas in it.
Yes.
Barely seen roommate, but she still has some speaking lines and does a good job with them. And then there's Grandpa Baked Apples, who also has like a little meaningful role in there. So I give it 4 dry kisses. I got so wrapped up in this movie towards the fucking end, and it completely took me off guard, surprised me. I don't understand why. I don't understand
how. Yeah, me neither.
But I'm just accepting it at face value and going with it.
This movie does things to you you don't even realize.
For real. What are we doing next week?
Next week, we're doing the 27-hour day.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it is the most self-helpy of them all, but I love how we've gone from job transition to like empty nest transition, and now we are going to life transition, but not in the dieted way.
At least we hope not.
Yes. If you have anything you'd like to say to us, you can email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com. You can also reach out to us via Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. And under those platforms, we are One Dry Kiss.
One spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you like the show, we would love to see your ratings and reviews anywhere you listen to this podcast. Love the 5 stars and the lovely things people say to us. It warms our hearts. And we thank each and every one of you that do take the time to give us a rating and a review, or just to reach out to us on social media and say sweet things, which has been happening quite a bit lately. So thank you all for your kind words. But anyways, we thank you for stopping by, and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah. We'll see you next time.
See you next time.
Bye. Bye.
Can I read? Can I read the sentence? No, I can't. And there's no big words in it either.
You said Funstable pretty good.
I know. Thank you. I needed that ego boost.
Yes. I can't read, but I can make up words real good.